I want to welcome all of you to our podcast from my kitchen table. For those of you who do not know me, I am Joe Packham, creator and editor-in-chief of your magazines, Where and What Women Create. Our podcast will be coming to you weekly, so I hope you will visit the website and listen to each one. I will be introducing you to the very famous in our industry, to those you may not have met just yet, and experts who can help us on our journey, whether that be art, business, or wellness. Our guests have much to teach, much to share, and much to give each of us. I would like to introduce you to my guest today. He is a very special person in my heart. I have not known him for a really, really long time, but from the day I met him, I have to say, I felt like we were friends forever. He is a mixed media artist, an instructor, author, and designer from New York City. He carries a strong belief in the power of art to bring people together and strengthen our communities. His artwork has been exhibited in multiple exhibitions and can be found in numerous books and national magazines. He has also published two books of his own, The Pulse of Mixed Media and The Mixed Media Artist. He loves the creative energy that occurs when artists and makers are brought together and has spent a great deal of time teaching workshops, both online and live in the United States, Canada, Mexico, Australia, and Europe. Closer to home, he is an instructor at Pratt Institute in New York City. And as a designer, he has created collections with many companies, including Impression Obsession, Stencil Girl Products, Paper Artsy, Wow, and Aladine. My guest today, and it is such an honor to introduce you to him, if you don't know him, or if you do, to let you hear part of his story that you may not know. So let me introduce you now to Seth Apter. Seth, welcome to From My Kitchen Table.
Hi, Joe. Thank you so much for inviting me. Such a pleasure to spend any minutes with you that I can grab at any point in time.
I feel the same way about you. You are so busy. Every time I see you on Facebook or Instagram or somewhere, I think, oh my hell, he's doing more classes, more artwork. He's doing more auctions. He's doing all kinds of things. I don't know how you sleep at night.
You know, I actually sleep pretty well, but in truth, I think sometimes I'm not sure how I manage to get as much done as I actually do.
Well, you are amazing. I want the podcasts that I want all of you to be involved in with me are all about you. So I want you to talk about what you want to talk about. I have a few things at the end that I like to plug in, but maybe the best way, and then I'm going to let you just take over, is how you got started in art.
Sure, I can share that story. And let me just say, isn't it just like Joe Packham to make it all about the other person as well? I appreciate that. When I tell my story about how I started, I usually preface it by saying that I don't really consider myself a great storyteller. Some people have that knack, and I don't really have that knack, but the story itself to me is so good, it tells itself. So it's a really nice way for me to break the ice on something like a podcast. So thank you for asking that question.
Okay, so I get to interrupt for just a minute, because I want the audience to know that Seth is a magnificent storyteller and he does a beautiful job. Sometimes I'm in tears when he tells his stories. So I want to set the framework so that you understand how lucky you are to have Seth telling the story himself.
Thanks, Joe. That's really sweet. Sweet of you to say. Thank you. I came to art later in my life and I had a full-time previous life before art, and that was as a psychologist. So I'll just throw that out now and reveal that to those of you who don't know that already. And I was living in New York City and working as a psychologist. I had worked for many, many years at a hospital, major hospital in New York City, and then moved on to my own private practice. And when I was working in my private practice, one of the things I'd like to do was to travel. And I didn't have much of an opportunity because of my time in my practice, but when I could, I did. And it was the year 2000, just to give you a headset. And I went for the first time to the Pacific Northwest, which was an area that I had never been to and really wanted to go to. And I started in Seattle and spent some time there. And I went up to Portland and spent some time there. And I went to Vancouver in Canada, and that's where I ended the trip. It was one of the first times that I had traveled alone and on my own. And it was just a really kind of eye-opening experience. When I got to Vancouver, I spent some time in the different neighborhoods, and I discovered a gallery from the outside that just really intrigued me. I should mention at this point that prior to that time, I barely, if ever, did anything creative in the visual arts. So I was not a maker. I was not a kid who always wanted to be an artist. I was not somebody who spent time drawing. I didn't do any of that. It was not on my radar, but I loved art. And I think being in New York City and being exposed to so many amazing museums and just cultural institutions, I fell in love with art as a viewer. So I went into this gallery as a viewer. I was just dragged in some way. And when I got in there, I saw this amazing art to me. It was mixed media. Didn't really know the word mixed media then. It was encaustic, and it was cement and textural and very abstract, just really, really spoke to my soul. So I went up to the woman who was at the desk there, and I said, hi, I'm, you know, my name's Seth. I'm visiting from New York, and I want to know a little bit about this artist. And she said, well, I'm the gallery owner. She introduced herself as Patricia. And she said, I'm also the artist, which was really exciting for me because, you know, in New York galleries, you, first of all, you never get to meet the artist. But more than that, even the people, well, this is more historically, but even the people who work the desk, they don't talk to you. They don't even look up really when you when you walk in. So here I was talking to the gallery owner and the artist. So I knew this was going to be good. And I just spent a couple hours with her. I will tell you that nobody else came in during the time I was there. And we just hit it off. And she told me a little bit about her practice and her art. And I don't know, I just kind of sort of fell in love with it. I fell in love with her. It's just really an amazing experience. And I bought two small pieces and thanked her, went back to finish up the vacation, and then went home. Went back to work, went back to my life. And about 2 weeks after I had gotten home, I received a postcard from her in the mail. And it was a handmade postcard. And there was just something about it that just really blew me away. Both the fact that she sent a postcard and took the time to do that, that she did it by hand. And it just seemed like such a special touch. Like just, it just really warmed my heart. So I thought, oh, this is so nice. What am I going to do? I have to send her a postcard, but I have to make one. Like I just felt pulled and compelled. But again, background, what do I know about making anything? So I made some postcard, have no clue what it looked like, to be honest, at this point. I mailed it back to her and thought that was the end of it until a few weeks later, I got something else in the mail from her, and it was sort of bigger, badder, and better. It was just a little sort of torn out book page with some painting on it. And I was amazed and loved it. But then I said, uh-oh, now what am I going to do? And I remember actually kind of feeling anxious, but I went across the street to where I live and I got this little, like, basically this like kid's watercolor kit. And I just slapped on some watercolor on a book page and I sent it back to her. And this just kept happening over and over and over again for years. Now, I didn't know it at the time, but it developed into what I now know to be a mail art relationship, where she would just send me something and basically I would copy it. Because what did I know? And I would send it back. And it just became such a big part of my life. Now, Patricia and I we're still really good friends, but we became very, very good friends. I traveled with her and her family to Italy. I helped her move to Mexico when she moved to Mexico from Vancouver. I mean, we are quite close. But what I didn't know was that at that time that she was going to completely redirect my life. And basically she redirected me into art, which at the time was just an escape from being a therapist, because as a therapist, you do need your own form of therapy. And was just a hobby, but it was a hobby that honestly completely took over. And now, you know, as we talk all these years later, you know, I'm a full-time artist. It's what I do. I'm no longer a practicing psychologist. And it just over the years, I transitioned, you know, my entire life, really.
I think it's so amazing in this community. And that is the perfect example of how inspiring someone else can be to one of us, because they will send us in a direction that we never anticipated in 100 million years. I was never an artist either until I met one friend who changed my life and sent me an entirely new direction. So I understand that completely. And the fact is that they do it so willingly. They don't hide their work or how they do it or the process. They're so willing to share and make you better and more of something that you never were. And that's what I love about this community so much. And Seth, that's what I love about you, because I want our audience to know that I met Seth at an event in Ogden, Utah. He was teaching at Eat Cake Create with Sally Ann McLeland, and Sharon Payne Bolton was one of the other teachers. And it was a fast friendship. In this industry, you feel like you've known somebody forever because you can associate with the same kind of art and the same kind of inspiration. And so there's a background there. So I'm curious, how long ago was that?
So we met in 2000.
So 21 years. So
21 years now. I'm an adult artist now. 21
years. And you're still a psychologist, may I say? I think depend on your wisdom.
Well, it comes up more than I ever expected that it would in a completely different career. So I value that background. It has helped me navigate sometimes challenging waters in other worlds outside of psychology as a profession.
So I would think that would be a great help in everything you do, because what I know about artists is they're more passionate, a little edgier, a little more on the edge than some people. I mean, I don't know very many accountants or lawyers who have the same passion that the artists that I know have. So it's got to be a great accomplishment for you to feel like you can help them stay a little bit more even through their art, right? Because you have that touch, you have that calming, secure, you can do this kind of touch. In your classes, I've seen it.
Well, it's interesting to me, because as things evolved, and I usually try to let things evolve pretty naturally and go with the flow, for the longest time I did not want to teach, because although I taught a lot in psychology, I just didn't feel fully equipped to teach the subject of art. So I resisted it. And then when I finally started to teach, I really enjoyed it. But what I discovered quickly was that the direction of my teaching was different than I would have expected. And part of that might just be the community and what people are bringing as participants to the class. And part of it might be who I am. But what I found is that part of what I teach has nothing to do with art. It has to do with giving people permission, trying to help people become more confident, to be able to see the beauty in what they do, to recognize their skills, to feel more comfortable with the inner critic. I mean, honestly, some of my classes feel a little bit like group therapy. And, you know, I don't think anybody minds.
No, everyone is so thankful. I can tell you that from experience, because you're so insecure and you're always comparing yourself to someone else. And that's hard when you're an artist, because you don't have to be the best, but you want to be respectable. And when I watched you teach your classes, that's the way you make everyone feel.
I mean, well, you know, I often say in my class, I want to let everybody in on a secret. Let's just say there's 20 people in the class. I'll say, you know, not speaking to anybody in particular, I'll say, you know how you're sitting there thinking, oh my God, 19 people are doing better than I am? the little secret is that every single person in the room is thinking the same thing. So I'm hoping that that gets the message across, that the insecurities that you're feeling, perhaps, it's everybody feels it. And honestly, any artist who says they don't is either lying or may not be the kind of artist I want to hang out with, because all of us, I mean, you talk to, you know, I know a lot of people in the field, and I know a lot of people who are extremely well respected and extremely prolific and just really well known, if you want to use that word. They all have the same insecurities. They all go through that as well. So people just need to know that they're not alone in these feelings.
Well, and I think that's what's so, I keep going back to this community and each of you and everything you do, and you go to great lengths to make people feel like that. I mean, I've been places where there are art sales, where, you know, at art shows and things, and I've seen artists buy other artists' work, not because they loved it, not because it spoke to them, but because no one else was, and they didn't want them to feel as if they were the only ones who, you know, weren't popular at the event.
Sure. Yep.
It's a passion and in a context that I had never witnessed before, because that's not exactly true in some industries. It's all about the competition, right?
And there's a sensitivity that not all, but many, if not most artists have. And I, and as a psychologist, I kind of think pretty much every person on this earth is a little broken, I should say. But I think when you look at artists, and, you know, it's a little bit of a cliche, but most people have some story about some trouble and challenge. And again, part of that is just being human. But I do think that the fact that a lot of us have been through something and survived it, it can lead you to open your eyes to be able to have some empathy, perhaps in a way that you may not have otherwise.
You're very wise, and I'm very lucky to have you be my friend. What I think I'll do is call you more often when I need a little time, Joe.
Right? You know, I always pick up. Let me just say, I know that this is about me, but you've had a few conversations with me, and I know you know that I will always sprinkle things about you or whoever I'm talking to. There are a small handful of people in the community who will ask me to do something, and no matter what it is, when it is, I will say yes. I'll say yes to a lot of things, but you are a person, because of how I value you, you just need to ask me, and you always know there's going to be a yes. I mean, always. And that
goes. Do you know what that does to someone? Do you know what kind of security and confidence that gives someone? Because if you think, when you're at least, especially when you're the most down, when you're the most insecure, if you know that there's somebody always there for you at the other end of the line who will help you for a minute, it's probably going to make me cry. I'm a little emotional, but it means more than all the money in the world. There isn't enough money that can buy that kind of support and that kind of friendship. And it is so valued. And that's why I love all of you and work so hard to keep these crazy magazines going. And now I'm doing these podcasts that I'm not good at and I'm brand new at. And but it's all for you, because I feel like if we support each other and everybody hears what you have to say and the kind things that you have to say, that they actually will believe it and have a little more confidence in themselves. What I want to know from you is how you combine the art with the selling of it and the, you know, making money at it and designing, because that's a whole different personality trait, right? And a whole new set of skills. And you're very good at both. So what can you help the rest of us do? Because that's really putting yourself on the block.
Well, I think this is a big issue for a lot of artists. There are definitely artists out there who either only want to focus on the creative part, or who just don't have the the sort of natural skills to focus on the business part, or have a hard time thinking of about it as a business per se. And I think in the world we live in the way that many people are going about being their own sort of their own entrepreneurs, rather than maybe perhaps going through the older system, the more traditional system of, you know, you hand your stuff over to a gallery and that's how it's handled. I think it's a challenge that a lot of us feel is difficult. I think for me, I don't know, I just feel, first of all, just very fortunate that I am where I am and I can do what I do. And I think a lot of my choices over the years have sort of led me to where I am. So having had my own private practice, that was my education into running a business, because I had already lived through this idea that I'm not getting a paycheck every week unless I make it happen. And I think that helps. And I also just want to say, again, if you're having a problem with something, or anybody out there is having a problem with something, it probably means everybody is. And so for me, I have a big challenge balancing commerce and creativity. It's a constant balance, both in terms of my time, how do I spend my time, and also how do I come across when I'm posting, because it's all about social media now. That's just the world we live in. So
that's my next question.
I find that the more that I do this as a business, the less time I actually make art, especially art for myself, which is disappointing and a constant struggle. And also the bigger struggle for me is not coming across as a salesman, because that's not who I am or what I want to be, but it's the way I make money. And so I often think about it this way. It's like the person who's, say, like, I don't know, a lawn care, like a gardener, lawn care company, you know, they're probably not feeling guilty when they post something about, you know, we can help you make your home more beautiful. Like, why should an artist feel guilty about putting out something saying I'm selling this, or you can, you know, spend this money for a class? It's just, it goes with the territory of having a profession. And that's sort of looking at it that way, that's helped me. You know, when my dentist gives me a bill, I expect it. So I understand it. That's just how it works. So I'm hoping that anybody out there recognizes that that's true for an artist as well.
So when you talk about the bills and giving somebody a bill, I know that the number one problem that a lot of artists have who sell their work is how to price it. I mean, what is, you know, payment enough for everything that you know and everything you do to pay your bills, buy new supplies, you know, give you a lifestyle of travel to different classes and things like that. So have you got any words of wisdom for them in regards to that?
Other than it's hard.
sometimes impossible.
Sometimes impossible. Well, the first, I think I preface everything words of wisdom is that recognize that this is a challenge and you're not alone in the challenge, and it's okay to be unclear about it. I think there's just multiple approaches that different people take. Some people will be very linear with it, no pun intended. You'll hear what I mean in a second. And they'll just base pricing on the size of their art, where there's a certain dollar amount that you apply for every square inch. If you're not familiar with that as a formula, just Google it. You'll find it everywhere. And sort of the more well-known you are, or the longer you've done it, then the higher the amount you're multiplying based on the square inch. And if you choose to do it that way, it's quite black and white. And so some people are very comfortable with that because there's not even a question mark. Once you choose the amount, you got it down. Other people are less specific. And I kind of go back and forth because I work small. Like, my work is often small, and I have made larger work, like 3 feet by 3 feet. And I did a piano project once, but mostly I work small. And when I say small, I mean, it could be like a 2-inch by 2-inch book. And for me, like 12 by 12 is large. So I don't always feel like that square inch phenomenon kind of works for me, because I could spend weeks on a piece. It's just small. And so is that fair to say it's worth less than a larger piece? And then also I work in different mediums. So I work in, say, painting, which may be priced differently than mixed media, where you're using objects and things like that. So what I have just found for me, the way I sort of developed my pricing, is that I just did a search. And I just looked at lots of people. I just made this my homework. And I looked at artists that I knew, artists that I didn't know, people who were working in similar mediums to me, people who seemed to be in the same place along their art journey as I. And I kind of just did that search. And what I found was that it was helpful, although there was always the people who priced really, really low. And there were always the people who priced really, really high. And for me, being in New York City, where when you go into a gallery, art is priced really high, like where the affordable art fair is basically 10,000 or less in New York City. That's the affordable art fair. So, and that's the truth. So it's tricky, but I think if you can find where you fit in, like, are you an artist in a very small town where maybe people are not going to be able to afford your work? And if you go to a show and you're pricing something at 10,000 and everybody else is at 150, you might be setting yourself up for failure. So do some of those comparisons and then find what you're comfortable with. You might be a person who's just wants your art to be accessible. You know, maybe you don't survive on your art and you just want people to have your work. You want to be out there. You want people to be able to enjoy art. Price it low, be fine with that. Or maybe you're a person who just feels like, you know what, I need to make my statement that I am a person worthy. I have put lots of hours in this. If it doesn't sell, it doesn't sell, but it's worth a lot to me. So kind of find where you fit in terms of your level of comfort, and then make that choice, and then be ready to change that. So over the years, if you start making more and selling more and become well known, by all means, raise your prices.
That's very good advice. Very good advice. I hadn't thought of it from that perspective exactly. So since you're so smart, I have another question, because this is everybody, well, not everybody, but almost everybody dreams of designing for a big company, right? That's the dream. They want to design Christmas ornaments. They want to have their own set of paints, whatever it may be. And I have experienced this my very self, is that you go to work for these big companies and they really like what you do, but the art director really wants to change it. I even get stuck on the words, right? Yeah. It's like, oh my hell, don't change my stuff. But because they want it to look like you, but they want it to look like have the brand of the company. And it can be a real battle. And from my perspective, what I see sometimes is that then it's no one's art. Mm-hmm. It's not your art because they've changed it so much. It's not their art because it doesn't look anything like their in-house designers do. So how do you, because you design for lots of other companies, how do you handle those kinds of situations?
Well, it's a good question. I think the trickiest part about that is that sometimes people are so, this is maybe a bad word to use, but they're so desperate to get out there and connect and have the opportunities that they'll say yes to everything or anything, which is often how we all start. You know, we say yes, 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 even if it's not the perfect match. But so I am speaking about somebody who's in a very, again, I say this all the time, I'm just so fortunate. So I highlight that I'm in a very fortunate position where I can have some choice. But for me, if you look at all the companies I work with, I have made a very deliberate choice to work with what I call the mom and pop companies. So there was a time along in my journey where I had a fork in the road where I could have gone in one or two directions. I could have gone sort of real big, well-known company, or I could have kept all sort of my smaller piecemeal mom and pops. And I really gave that some serious thought, but in the end decided I needed my moms and my pops, because, well, we all need that. But I needed to know that I could be buddies with the people I work with or work for. I needed to know that they would be able to hear me and see me and value what I do. and recognize that if they're hiring me to do something, it's because they're hiring me, not another person. So they should get me. And these are, you know, all the companies I work with, and I'm not going to say they've all been perfect because Lord knows they haven't been. But these smaller companies that allow you to be part of them and part of their family, which is to me what it's really all about, they will hear and see you in a way that I think some of the larger companies just don't or can't really. You know, you may not even be at the larger company, you may not even be working, you may not even be answering to a creative. You might be in a position where the decision making is made by somebody who's never done anything creative in their life in terms of this kind of work. And I don't want that kind of person dictating what I put my name on. But again, I say this, I am so fortunate now to be in a place in my career where I have some choice. Not everybody does.
I think that's probably the most valuable information you could give our audience ever, because I've been in both positions as well. Mm-hmm. And I'm not very good at backing down. And so there's lots of tension in the boardroom, so to speak, right? And that doesn't make for a good working environment either. And so I think what you say to people, I hope they will play this and replay this so they can hear you say it again and again, because sometimes they can't do it on their own. They need like a cheerleader behind them saying, you know, you don't have to take this job. It's not that important. Something else will come up. And with you being taped, they can hear you say it to them every over morning and over if again. They need to. I may play that over and over again for sure. So we're almost running out of time, which just seems unbelievable to me. So there's a couple of things, Seth. One, I want you to promise that you'll come back again. I think
we can do a whole series
of Seth, because you're so wise, right? And calming and just such a good friend. I want everybody that I know to know you and love you as much as I do. But, and what's really funny is I'm not even sure we've ever been to dinner together, have we? I mean, have we gone out to dinner? Like
not out to dinner. No.
And not, we've had dinner at the events, right?
Yes.
With a group and stuff. But, it's interesting that in this community, which I say over and over and over again, you feel such a camaraderie and a closeness because you have such a basis to build on.
Yes.
That you get rid of all the stuff in between. Yeah. That's not that important. I am going to come to New York again now that COVID may be over someday. I will take you to dinner.
But we're going to go out to dinner.
I do want you to come back because I do want everybody to be able to share with you everything that you have to share with them. You are so wise and so sweet and so generous. But I have a couple of things, and you may have already said this already, but I always ask everybody, what is one secret that you would like our audience to know that a lot of other people may not know?
Yeah, I thought about that one. So I'm going to say that when I tell my story, because all our stories, they become sort of set in stone, you know, like that story about how I became an artist. That's, you know, I've said that so many times. And I always say, you know, I was never really creative. And that is true. I really, in terms of visual arts, but one thing that very few people know, and Joe, I'm sharing this. It's not that biggest, like, no, it's not a big deal, but I'm sharing it because you're asking, is that there was always a creative urge in me, always. And it came out in lots of weird ways. Like, you know, I picked up the guitar and tried to play it, not very successfully. Like it took me a while to find my niche, I think, but when in the 90s, back in the 90s, being in New York City, I don't know, having the opportunity, I had a really good friend who was an actor. And he invited me to his acting class one day, just as a guest, you know, not as a guest, it's just as to watch.
Right.
And there was just something about it that completely pulled me in. And those who know me well know that I'm going to turn in what could be a negative into a positive and say that when I do something, I always do it 100%. And I think it's really like a little bit of OCD, So like, you know, I dabble
but
in
I
art.
Love that. I love that about you.
Well, thank you. So like, if I dabble in art, you know, I become a full-time artist. Like I can't not do something 100%. So in the 90s, I signed up and I started to take classes in acting at actually quite a prestigious studio in New York, HB Studios, which you have to audition for and all that. And somehow I got in and I went through this jag for about 2 or 3 years, I would say, where I started to do it all. I got headshots. I started audition.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was crazy. And it ended because if I'm going to do something, I can't just do it. Like it was either I continue in my job,
right?
Because you can't just walk away from your job and go to auditions. Like you just can't do
unless
that.
You're a bartender or a
exactly.
waiter.
Exactly. But I was a psychologist. I can't like leave a session in the middle of it at the hospital. So I did that for a bunch of years, and the pinnacle, which wasn't really much of a pinnacle, but for me was that I did a public service announcement for the World Wildlife Association. And it was full on, it was amazing. It was just full on like a real like commercial that aired publicly.
Gosh.
So, and I don't tell many people that, it just, I don't know why I don't, but so that's my secret.
Well, I love that story and I love your secret. And I promise to tell everyone I know.
The secret's out. It's a pretty safe secret. Though.
Absolutely. So you're going to have to think of other secrets when you come back, because you always have to have a secret, right?
Yes. So, okay.
And then to end this, I always ask my guests, what is your favorite quote? Because I think that is so telling of people. Because some writers have a gift of saying everything in, you know, under 10 words. Hmm. And me, for example, I can say almost nothing in about 1,000. So
I think that's part of the reason why we like each other so much. I am anything but concise when I speak.
Oh, good. So yeah. What's your favorite quote?
Okay, so I'm reading it. It's from Proust, which really, honestly, like, it sounds intellectual, but that does not mean anything to me. But the quote is, the real voyage of discovery consists not in seeing new sights, but in looking with new eyes.
I love that. I love
that. And I just love that, because for me, the world is available to us. There's so much out there to experience, to sort of nourish on. And sometimes you just need to have your eyes open to the possibilities. And it may be right in front of you, but if you're not willing or able or comfortable to take that leap or to sort of step off the edge a little bit, you are just not gonna see it. And sometimes people will go to far extremes to find something different or new or better. Maybe it'll be better if I move here or if I have a relationship with that person. And sometimes it's just really about seeing what's right in front of you and just seeing it in a different way.
I love that more than anything. And I have friends who travel really a lot. It's their whole life is traveling, which I understand completely. I love to see new places. But what absolutely startles me is when we'll be standing someplace in some little tiny village in France, and they say, this reminds me of Sausalito. I'm like, what the hell? You can just go to Sausalito, right? And you hear that a lot. So I think I love your saying, and I hope people realize how profound it is, because it really is very profound. You can walk out your front door.
Definitely speaks to me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you 1,000 times. I want to thank our audience for listening. I want to remind you all again and again and again that we really do need to support each other. You need to visit Seth's website. You need to buy the products that he designs. If you're ever lucky enough, I've tried to buy a couple of his pieces of artwork, but I'm not fast enough, so haven't got that managed yet. But and like him on Instagram, which is a subject that we're going to get to in next time you come, Seth, is about social media, because it's the best and the worst of our world, right?
Yep.
So I want us to all help support each other in a really good way, to thank you all for coming, to thank Seth from the bottom of my heart, and wish him the best of luck in the days to come. And I will end all of this with my favorite quote, which is, I love you, Seth, and all of you with 1,000 hearts.
Thank you, Joe. You're the best, and I so appreciate the time that you give to so many people. So thank you.
Thank you. See you soon.
Bye.
Bye.